Hi everybody, it's been 2 weeks. Last week obviously we had the snow, and I hope everybody survived it, hopefully safe and sound and everything else. And Baruch Hashem, I heard a number of boys in our Sameach, they were talking, this reminds me of home. They said, no, you're home, this is home. It reminds you of where you used to live, but whatever it was. But be it as it, yeah.
Before the 6 day war, we're living here, my cousin-in-law sent a telegram, send the children home, and we sent right back, they are home.
They are home, that's right. But still, snow is enjoyable, but up to a certain limit, okay. But Be'ezras Hashem, I mentioned this before, Rabbi Avigdor Miller, who was one of the main teachings of his life, was the union of Hakara Satov. So he said that you have to start with your children, that no matter what the weather is, you have to kind of be positive about it. Instead of, oh, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet, it's too dry, you look at everything as an adventure, as something exciting, as something nice, as a bracha, and that way it creates a certain attitude of Hakara Satov that goes through their entire lives. We are learning in this parsha, of course, we're beginning Sefer Shmos, and the next few parshios are all about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we know, of course, that these parshios are also described by an acronym. We're in the weeks that are called Shelvavim. Shelvavim are simply Shmos, Va'era, Bo, Bashalach, Yisro, Mishpatim. And some people do a Tosefet, and they have Tat, Truma Tetzaveh. So it's Shelvavim Tat. This is always the period between basically Hanukkah and Purim, where there's not a lot going on otherwise. And Shovavim Tat, it's really from Kabbalah, really. There's in the Gemara itself, there's no reference to it, even in the Shulchan Aruch. But Shovavim is set aside as weeks of tshuva, weeks of Cheshbon HaNefesh, and in particular those things that are related to inyanim of sexuality, whether it's for men, Shemira Soinayim, for women, Tznias, Hilchos Nida, for both men and women. But it's Isman of Tshuva generally. And indeed, the reason that is so, though, is a very deep and profound reason. That is, that by Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have an important teaching. Chayav Adam Leros Esatzmo, Ki'ilu Hu Yatza Mi Mitzrayim. Each person must personally feel that they themselves were taken out of Mitzrayim. Now, what does that mean? Lamaisa, we were not in Mitzrayim. Lamaisa, we were not slaves in Egypt. Yes, it's true, as the Haggadah says, if Hashem would not have taken our forefathers out of Mitzrayim, we would still be there. But you see, to be grateful for what Hashem did to my ancestors, because I'm benefiting from it, is not exactly the same thing as saying it's as if I myself was taken out of Mitzrayim. So there is a very beautiful explanation that is given by the Baal HaTanya and later by the Sfas Emes and many other Sifrei Chassidus. And this actually ties into what you were learning in Tehillim, that the word Mitzrayim has a double meaning. Mitzrayim is Egypt, a certain nation, not modern Egyptians, but the ancient Egyptians, etc. And certainly, as Maminim, we believe that Yetzias Mitzrayim is 100% literal. We were slaves in Egypt, and Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with the Ten Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf. But Mitzrayim also has a metaphorical and symbolic meaning. The word Mitzrayim means limitation or constraint. When David HaMelech says, Min HaMeitzar Karasika, I call out of Hashem from the narrow, confining places that suffocate me. And seen in this way, every single Jew, and indeed every single person, has their own Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is what limits us, what constrains us, what chokes us, what suffocates us, what prevents us from connecting to the Ribono Shel Olam and realizing the beauty and the holiness of our neshama. And that Mitzrayim can be a lot worse than the external Mitzrayim, because that Mitzrayim is an inner Mitzrayim. The older folk may remember when cigarettes used to be advertised on television. You may remember television too, perhaps, you know. And the old motto used to be, we were allowed to watch in those days, all of this was mutter. we were allowed. So one of the commercials was, you can take Salem out of the country, but you cannot take the country out of Salem. The cigarette. So similarly, the Bali Musar like to say, perhaps these Bali Musar saw the commercial too, you can take the Jew out of Mitzrayim, but it's much harder to take Mitzrayim out of the Jew. Our Mitzrayim, every person has their own Mitzrayim. It might be my arrogance, gaiva, or it might be depression, or egotism, anger, selfishness, laziness, lack of chesed. All of us have a Mitzrayim. And the Mitzrayim blocks us and it chains us. And Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzmai means that the same way God put in the Koach of redemption that enables us to leave the specific historical Mitzrayim, so too each and every one of us is given that Koach by the Ribono Shel Olam to experience our own Yitzias Mitzrayim. This is what the Bava Tanya says is the meaning, Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzmo Kilu Hu Yatzo Mimitzrayim. Ideally, that Ha'ora, that light, comes Leil Seder. Leil Seder is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to re-experience redemption. But B'Zeir Anpin, Zeir Anpin is just a Kabbalistic Aramaic expression that means in microcosm, in small measure. The Parshios of Yetzias Mitzrayim also bring that light into the world. And that is why these weeks are very mesugal for tshuva. Because tshuva is the process by which we latch on to the redemption that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. Remember in the Shemone Esrei itself, right? What is the pattern of the brachos in the Shemone Esrei? After the first three brachos, we ask Hashem for wisdom and knowledge, hatachonein. We then ask Hashem to help us do tshuva. We then get forgiveness as a result of our tshuva, and from that forgiveness comes geula. So geula is associated with that inner liberation that comes when we are freed from our sin. And in fact, even the word shavavim is actually a pun. On one level, shavavim is an abbreviation, shmos va'era, but shovev, shavavim, shuvu banim shavavim, wayward, wild, uncontrolled. And this is the time where we could be misakin that. So a person has to identify their Mitzrayim. And you know, it's interesting. There was a well-known entertainer in the United States, a black entertainer, I mentioned it for a reason, who commonly wore gold chains. You know, gold chains around his neck. So when he was asked why he wears gold chains all the time, he said, I want to emulate my ancestors who came to the United States as slaves. They had chains and I wear chains. The difference is their chains were iron and around their legs and my chains are gold and around my neck. Now, this is actually a profound remark, although perhaps unintentionally profound. I don't necessarily want to credit the person for profundity, but maybe, yeah. And that is, what he's saying is that the gold chain around the neck can be every bit as enslaving as the iron chain around the leg. And perhaps even more so. Because the iron chain is the one that's enslaving me bachutz. The gold chain, the commitment to hedonism, to power, to status, to wealth, is the enslavement that we put upon ourselves. And this is the Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatzo Mimitzrayim. So these weeks are indeed weeks where we get to relive Yetzias Mitzrayim, and not just relive it, but to actually experience it. At least B'Zeir Anpin. Pesach is the full measure, but we get some of that light even in these weeks as well. In fact, it's very interesting. The Beis Halevi is said to have once remarked, although it's not, well, actually it is in a safer and a slightly different lashon. The Beis Halevi says the following, and see if this makes sense to you. We do not celebrate Pesach because we were taken out of Mitzrayim. Rather, we were taken out of Mitzrayim because it was Pesach. What that means is the following. This is a very important idea. all Yamim Tovim are not because they're commemorations of historical experiences. It's the other way around. These are times of year in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes certain spiritual powers available and accessible in the world. Pesach is a time of redemption, so redemptive things happen. Shavuos is a time of Torah, so the Torah was given. And the reason why that's important is because if the idea was something would be a holiday only because something happened then all you would be doing is commemorating the past. But if you understand that this is a zaman where certain hashpa'ot come into the world, then every single Pesach there is this koach of liberation. Every single Shavuos, there's the koach of Torah. Every single Sukkot, we experience the sheltering love of Hashem in the Anani HaKavod. And the fact that certain events happen, that's not the cause of the Yom Tov, that's the result of that Yom Tov. That's what the Beis Halevi means. We were taken out of Mitzrayim because it's Pesach. And the Maral says, an interesting point, it's Nogeya this year. Right, all of you know that the Jewish calendar is primarily a calendar based on the moon. It is a lunar calendar, but as opposed to a solar calendar. But the problem is, of course, 12 lunar revolutions around the Earth is only 354 days. And the number of days that it takes the Earth to go around the Sun is, let's approximate 365 days, right? So approximately, I'm not going to get into fractions, approximately, the solar year is 11 days longer than the lunar year. So any given year, when you match up a Hebrew date and a secular date, the next year, the secular date is going to be 11 days earlier. So if in year one, whatever your year one is, Pesach is April 15, in year two, it'll be April 4, in year three, it'll be the end of March, etc., etc. And that's what we mean when we say the Yom Tovim are early this year. In a way, that's a non sequitur. Pesach is early this year? Gee, I thought Pesach is always the 15th of Nisan. That doesn't change. Pesach can neither be early nor late, but we simply mean relative to the solar season. Now, the problem is, of course, the Torah insists that Pesach be in the spring, Chodesh Ha'aviv. And without an adjustment, Pesach will get earlier, 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 so it'll eventually be the middle of January or February, etc. Right? So right up, imagine if you had to clean up for Pesach this past week, it would have been a little difficult. So as a result, it is built into the Jewish calendar that 7 out of 19 years, we add an extra month of Adar to push Pesach to correspond with the spring, right? That's called a solar intercalation, technically, right? So if you want to be pedantic about it, we have a lunar calendar with a solar intercalation, as opposed, for example, to the Islamic calendar, right? Our neighbors across the street. The Islamic calendar is a total lunar calendar without a solar adjustment, and that is why the festival of Ramadan can be any time of year. It can rotate from the summer, the winter, the fall. Of course, given the fact that Ramadan in the winter is a lot easier than the summer, both because of the heat and the length of the day, I can understand why they don't want to have an Ibrior to keep Ramadan in the summer. So maybe it makes sense from that perspective. Right? Now, keep in mind that the Jewish calendar is now predetermined. Okay, so we know exactly what year is a leap year, what year is not a leap year. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, when Rosh Chodesh depended on witnesses coming to the Sanhedrin and saying they saw the new moon, every single year the Sanhedrin would make its own decision. Should this be a leap year? Meaning you didn't have the 7 out of 19. Sometimes you might have had, you know, every year was a leap year for a while. In other words, basically it was a very ad hoc individual process. But be it as it may, the Maral asks the following question. Why is the Torah so insistent that Pesach be in the spring? Who cares? I mean, after all, as long as it's the 15th of Nisan, we are commemorating the date of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why does it have to be in the springtime? So the Maral says exactly this idea. A Yom Tov is not simply a commemoration. A Yom Tov is a reliving of the spiritual powers that Hashem puts into the world that enables a person to achieve liberation. And he says, the physical signs on earth are telling you what Hashem put into the Bria. What is spring? Spring is the time when the ground and the vegetation and the fruits and the flowers get liberated from the dormancy and the enslavement of the winter. In the winter, whether you have a lot of snow or even without snow, you know, things aren't growing, basically. Or at least they're not visibly growing. Right? You don't see leaves on the trees, you don't see flowers coming out, etc. It's as if things are imprisoned. And spring is liberation. But the Maral says, the physical liberation of the earth is simply reflecting the spiritual liberation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into the Bria. That's why a Jew ideally should be an observer of nature. One of the things that we've suffered, because for so many years we were forced to live in cities, we weren't even in Europe, we were not even allowed to own land for hundreds of years, is we've lost our sensitivity to the natural rhythms. Even day and night, I think about stars, right? I remember when I was a child, this bothered me. When I first saw the pasuk, Hashem tells Avraham, your children will be like the stars of the heavens. Kochvei HaShemayim. So I looked up at the sky, and I saw like three stars. I said, what's the big deal here? You know, stars of the heaven, you know, etc. All right, dust of the earth, afar, oh, it's okay, that I can see. Kochvei HaShemayim. Right, because we have light pollution, we don't see stars at all. And then I once was in Amuka, you know. I said, wow, hey, there are millions of stars up there. That's pretty amazing. Even Vasikin, I'll give you an example of this. You know, okay, yeah, I don't want to insult anybody, but you know, the best time to daven Shemon Esrei of Shacharis, the ideal time, is exactly when the sun is coming up. Right, that's called davening kavasikin. So people time their minyanim, so they'll begin davening, let's say, 25 minutes before sunrise, so they will hit Shemona Esrei, exactly with the rising of the sun. Now what is the purpose of that? The purpose of that is to inspire you, that just as the sun is bringing light to a new day, and in its rising, it's praising HaKadosh Baruch. So we join in a symphony with all of creation to praise Hashem. Now what is a typical Vasikin Minyan doing? They're looking at the clock because it says sunrise, and the Vasikin Minyanim clocks are to like a tenth of a second. And in fact, I had to daven once at a Vasikin Minyan for my father's yard site, a Minyan I normally didn't daven in, and I think I was like 2 seconds late, meaning to say I started Shemon Esrei 2 seconds after the rising, their time on the clock, and they yelled at me. I'm not sure I can go back there and daven for the Omid anymore. But the point is this. Do you see a certain contradiction here that I'm supposed to daven Vasikin by looking at a clock? First of all, 200 years ago, they didn't look at a clock. That's obvious. Or 500 years ago, whatever it was, the time of the Tanaim and Amoraim, Moshe Rabbeinu, they didn't look at a clock. They didn't have a clock. Maybe a sundial, but that's a, you know, different type of thing. But the point is, you see what's happening. We're so dissociated from the wonders of Hashem's Bria that even the mitzvahs that are designed to inspire us by our connection to Hashem's Bria, we turn into a mechanical thing. Vasikin is supposed to inspire me with the world of nature. So the Maral says, same thing with the seasons. Spring means Hashem is putting into the world freedom, liberation. Yitzias Mitzrayim, my own Mitzrayim. So the Maral says, if you make Pesach not in the spring, you're commemorating an event that happened on that Hebrew date, but you're not able to experience the freedom that Hashem is putting into the world, because those kochos aren't there until the spring. And that's why the halacha is so insistent, the Maral says, that you have to push Pesach into the spring, because the Yom Tov cannot just be a commemoration. It has to be an experiencing. And therefore it has to match the natural cycle of the world. Now you might ask Akasha, well wait a second here. In South Africa, in the Southern Hemisphere, Pesach is not during the spring. So l'chara, how can they celebrate Pesach? The answer is, of course, that the spiritual kochos come into the world via Eretz Yisrael, and then they spread. So even if there's snow in South Africa, whatever season they're having, is it summer or winter? I don't know, in the southern hemisphere, I forget which.
Now it's summer.
It's summer, okay. Okay, but whatever it is, the point basically is, no matter what is going on, even in Antarctica, right, even if it's, you know, still plenty of snow and ice, but if in Eretz Yisrael it's spring, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts those kochos into the Bria, and they spread outwards, and they elevate even the person in the middle of the ice of the South Pole.
Yeah. Right now they're in the middle of winter.
Winter, okay. So by Pesach time they'll already be, okay. 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 All right, listen, no, whatever it is, okay, whether it's winter, summer, whatever it is, the idea is that all of the kochos of the world, in fact, even tefillah works that way too, right? In other words, our tefillahs, all tefillahs throughout the world, first travel to Eretz Yisrael, and then they go up. They don't go up directly from Borough Park or New York, or Lakewood or Muncie, or even Baltimore, although Baltimore might be close, but whatever, you know. But rather, all of the tefillahs go here, and then go up, and also all of the hashpa'ot, all of the divine influences, come down from here, and then go out. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Alrighty. Right, so this is what the Maral says is the inyan of why Pesach has to be b'chodesh aviv. Now, I do want to talk about one particular element, though, and that is the following. These are the weeks of Shovavim, these are the weeks of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and I repeat the phrase Bezer Anpin, because obviously Pesach is the more intense, but Hashem gives us a little bit in these parshios as well. And it's interesting that one of the halachos of the obligation to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, at least during the Seder, and I'm getting ahead a little bit, is the idea of Maschil Bignus Umesayim Bishvach. What does it mean to be maschil b'gnus u'messayim b'shvach? It's not enough just to talk. Now, during the year, we just say, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Zeh maspik. But in the Haggadah, we can't just think about Hashem taking us out of Mitzrayim. We have to also remember the bad stuff. Remember how bad it was to be a slave. Remember how lowly it was to be an idol worshiper. We actually emphasize both ideas. You gotta begin with the negative. You can't just talk about the positive. This is called in the Mishnah, Maschil Bignus Umesayem Bishvach. To begin with the bad and culminate in the praiseworthy gratitude to God. Why is it so important to talk about the negatives? Why can't they just accentuate the positive? So there's a simple reason, which is a valid reason, but there'll be a little problem with it. The simple reason is, it is the nature, when we learned the Chovas HaLevavos, we talked about this, it is the nature of Hakaras HaTov, that generally speaking, I don't appreciate the good things I have in my life, until Chas V'Shalom, I remember how bad they were without them, or I lose them. A person appreciates health much more. When Rachmano Litzlan, they recovered from illness. Or if they didn't recover from illness, even more so, they certainly appreciate the health that they had. A person appreciates prosperity when they've suffered poverty. That is why Holocaust survivors, or even people who came from communist countries or repressive societies, appreciate freedom much more than people who were born here. So in many ways, we need to talk about the bad, because without talking about the bad, we don't have Hakaras HaTov for the good. Now, the Chovas HaLevavos says, this is actually a paradox. Because if you think about it, if a person has gone through life with no deprivations at all, say a person has always had good health, he's always had parnasa, he's always had enough food, the chesed is even greater. Hashem didn't even give him the bad thing to then redeem him. So if anything, the Chovas HaLevavos says, a person who didn't suffer the deprivation should even be more makir toif to HaKadosh Baruch Hu than the person who suffered. The chesed is greater. But nebuch, because we never had the alternative, We don't appreciate it so much. So one idea of maschil b'gnusa misayim b'shvach simply means I got to remember the bad because that makes me, that gives me gratitude to the Eibishter. But there's a problem with that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not only the author and the architect of our freedom, he is also the one that decreed our servitude. He said to Avraham Avinu that your children will be enslaved and persecuted in a land that is not theirs for 400 years. We were only there 210 years. And the nation that enslaves them all punished. So the question is this, this may backfire. If I'm supposed to think about the slavery, so I'm grateful to Hashem for the freedom, my response might be, but you made me a slave. So imagine I take somebody and I throw them in a jail cell and I'm saying, you're going to be in this cell for 400 years, assuming a person could live that long. And I come back after 210 years and I let them go and I say, be grateful to me. I'm here 190 years earlier than I said I would come. Well, your feeling, whether you express it or not, might be, yeah, but you know, why did you stick me here for 210 years? So the question is bringing up the slavery going to give us more hakaras hatov? Or does it engender resentment? So the answer has to be this. If you simply looked at mentioning the negative as a precursor to be grateful for redemption, then you really have a question, because God is the architect and author of the negative, just as he is the architect of the positive. But the deeper meaning, again, the Sfas says, the deeper meaning of maschil bignus is not remember the bad so you'll be grateful for the good, but recognize that even within the so-called bad was a goodness, was a light, was a redemption. In other words, if you viewed Yetzias Mitzrayim this way, we were free, then we were slaves, and then we were free. So if you simply looked at the freedom after the slavery as doing nothing more than putting you back where you were before the slavery, then indeed one could justly have a taina on the Ribono Shel Olam. Why'd you put me through this? But if you understand that the freedom that we got as a result of the Avdus was a qualitatively different life than what we would have had without the Avdus, then one understands that there's a redemptive potential even within the slavery itself. Now, how is that so? How is that so? Meaning to say, part of our gratitude is not just for the Cheres, part of our gratitude is for the Avdus itself. And by Yetzias Mitzrayim, we can identify at least two things that we were Kona, two positive, deep, profound transformations that occur to us. One is merumas in the words of Chazal, and the other is merumas in the Torah itself. Let me take Chazal first. Everyone knows the famous teaching, and it's not a Chazal, this teaching is from the Arizal, that the Jewish people reached in their 210 years in Mitzrayim, they reached the 49th level of impurity. There's only 50 level. When you hit 50th, you are irredeemable. And they were on 49, and they were slipping fast, and they were over the Avodah Zarah. They did not practice Bris Milah, except for Shevet Levi. And had they stayed even another second, even the few minutes that it takes for their dough to rise to Chametz, we don't even know what that means, that you only have a minute till you hit the level number 50, they would have hit level number 50 and they would have been irredeemable. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to take us out 190 years early, because even another minute we would have hit the 50th level. And yet, notwithstanding the fact, take it? No. He had to take us out that minute, meaning at the point that he took us out. I'm saying he had to get us early, meaning he couldn't wait another second. It happened to be 190 years early, but he had to take us out then because we would have hit the 50th level. Notwithstanding that fact, the Gemara tells us that the Jews had a number of zechuyos. In spite of being on the 49th level of impurity, they didn't change their names. They kept their Jewish names. They didn't change their language. They spoke Lashon HaKodesh. According to some versions, they wore distinctively Jewish clothing, although the cloak has, if we're goris that. They did not intermarry. They did not speak Lashon Hara. Now think about that. These were not indicia of frumkeit, per se. Because they weren't from. I mean, they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. You can't be worse than that. But these are indicators of Avas Yisrael, of love, of unity. We would call it somewhat pejoratively ethnic identification. So people call it cardiac Judaism, Judaism of the heart, or bagels and lox Judaism. We have all sorts of kind of insulting terms for that type of Judaism. You go with your Hebrew name and your Magen David. And yet, Chazal do identify the idea of wanting to be connected to your fellow Jew by language and by clothing as a zechus that merited redemption. Now, here is what the Beis Halevi says. When did the Jews develop that? Before the slavery or after the slavery? Or during the slavery? The Beis Halevi quotes a medrash that says that when Yosef and the Shvatim died, the next generation of Jews actually said the following idea. Right? When Yosef died, the Jews were still held in great esteem. They were admired, etc. They made the following kal v'chomer. If we are accepted and admired and treated so well, when we live in a distinct way in Goshen with our own minhagim, if we become more and more like the Egyptians and assimilate into their ways, they will love us even more. So in the aftermath of Yosef's death, the Medrash says many Jews wanted to assimilate, and they even said, Nihiye kemitzriim. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was, as is often the case in Jewish history, he put hatred in the hearts of Paro and the Egyptians. So the more the Jew wanted to be like the guy, the more the guy tells the Jew, we don't want you. You don't belong. And it was that chesed, so to speak, that made the Jews realize we only have each other and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't come to you yet, they were over there, but L'chalapach is we only have each other. In other words, you see what the Beis Halevi is saying? Beis Halevi is saying, the Lo Shinu Es Shemam, not changing their names, not changing their language, was how they responded to slavery. Because they were slaves, they knew they can never make it. They will never be accepted. Right? And Mimela, the Beis Halevi says, that according to this Chazal, one of the things that Yetzias Mitzrayim gave us was a sense of achdus, a sense of unity, a sense of caring for each other, because we know that the world will not care for us. I believe Benjamin Franklin once remarked when the Declaration of Independence was signed, and that was an act of war against Great Britain, we must all hang together, for if not, we will surely hang separately. And Chachma Bagoyim Tamin, I think Ben Franklin's motto, certainly applies to Am Yisrael. We have to be together. If we're not together, we're vulnerable, we're weak. And to feel that our Hatzalah can be by assimilating into the Umos HaOlam. Again, the Meshech Chachma wrote, right, the Meshech Chachma wrote in a very, very famous passage. The Meshech Chachma died in the 1920s, and the Sefer Meshech Chachma was probably written perhaps at the end of the 19th century, a lot of it. So this is many, many years before Hitler, when Hitler was not even known to anybody. And the Meshech Chachma wrote in the Tochacha that those Jews who see Berlin as the new Yerushalayim, they see the secular culture of science and philosophy and literature as the basis of how they can make a good life. will see that that very science and literature and technology will turn into a source of great, great destruction. Mamashi essentially prophesied that the Tochacha would have its fulfillment from Germany, because it was precisely Germany where the Jews were the most connected to the second. You know, Poland and Russia, you know, Jews couldn't do anything in Poland or Russia, so essentially they were forced to be separate. Germany was the one country, Germany and France, actually, were the two countries where Jews more or less were able to assimilate. Now again, of course, we all understand that this does not exonerate Rishoyim. I don't mean to blame the victim and let Rishoyim off the hook. But the Torah does indicate there's a certain pattern in Jewish history that unfortunately, tragically, when there's great, great assimilation because we want to be like the Umos HaOlam then remind us that we cannot be like them. And therefore, the first benefit, so to speak, quotation marks, of Yetzias Mitzrayim is it gave us a sense of Achdus and Avas Yisrael, because the Loshinu Eshemam was a consequence of the Avdus. Until the Avdus was the other way around, Niyeh K'Mitzriyim. But there's a second lesson, as I indicated, that's in the Torah itself. There's a remarkable pasuk in Chumash Devarim where the Torah says, "You shall love the ger." And this is one of more than 30 places where the Torah says you must love and take care of a person who converts to Judaism. You must love the ger because you were gerim in the land of Mitzrayim. Now, we normally translate ger as convert, which of course it is, but that doesn't make sense in that actual pasuk. Love the person who converts because you were converts in the land of Mitzrayim? You were not converts. We were not gerim in Eretz Mitzrayim. The answer is, the Torah is using the literal meaning of ger. Ger means a stranger. Now, a person who converts to Judaism is indeed called a stranger because they come to Klal Yisrael without family connections, and maybe their original biological family rejects them, often without money. At a time when owning land was so important, because Eretz Yisrael was divided, giving people land, the ger had no land. So what is the Torah saying? When you sit high and pretty, high and mighty, in your land, in your property, in your government, and somebody comes to you with no connections, no protection, no influence, no family, no wealth, and you might ignore them because they don't really count, they're not significant, there are nobody, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling you to do? Remember what it was like to be a stranger, because you were once a stranger in Mitzrayim. You know what it's like to be nobody. You know what it's like to not have connections, not have influence, not have power. And what is the Torah telling us? You know, it's the nature of a person when they've been through a difficult time in their lives and now they're over it, they want to forget about it. They want to put it behind them. They don't want to relive it all the time. But Hashem says, no, 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 remember every single day, twice a day, that you were a slave. Every single day. Not only to be grateful to Hashem, although that's a very important point, but remember that when you see people who are downtrodden, without influence, without money, without family, without connections, you don't simply push them aside, but use the suffering that you went through, we went through as a people, as a source of empathy and rachmanus and compassion for those who are downtrodden. We know that Klal Yisrael is known for the midah of rachmanus, right? The three midahs of Klal Yisrael. Rachmanim, people of compassion. Baishanim, people of humility. Gomlei chasadim, people who want to do chesed. Where does the Jew get that? So there are really two makoros from which we get it. One, of course, is from Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was mashrish into his people this desire to help others. And the other is Yetzias Mitzrayim. We collectively have to remember what it's like. Instead of saying, Baruch Hashem, I'm beyond it so I can forget about it. Hashem says, try to remember what it was like. And that is why, even when it gets perverted sometimes, Jews always have Rachmanis. That is why, for example, Jews were so involved in the anti-apartheid in South Africa. Civil rights movement, there were Jews who died. I will even tell you, and this is what I mean by perverted, even the totally misplaced and unjustified, so don't throw stones at me, whatever it is, agitation on behalf of Palestinian rights, which is a meshugas and a travesty. But I want to be melamed zechus on B'nai Yisrael. It does come from the notion that when a Jew perceives somebody suffering, a Jew wants to help them. Again, things get perverted, that's always true, but it comes from that midah of wanting to be a Rachman. Even politically, I certainly don't want to get into this. Why do Jews vote, you know, democratic liberal politics so much? Right? The answer once again is, if they perceive, if the rich Hollywood people perceive that somehow a guy like Obama is going to be kinder to the poor, perceive, they'll vote for him. Again, the point I'm making is that things can move in all sorts of crazy direction. But foundationally, it does come from this idea of rachamim. And Mitzrayim was a very important idea. Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yeah? No, I understand. I want to make it very clear. I'm not here to defend any of those things. And certainly I understand that it backfires, and if you're merachem in inappropriate ways, you cause greater achsaris. Certainly. My point is not to justify. My point is that the Yiddish neshama pops out. Even when it pops out in the wrong place, it's still an expression of a Yiddish neshama. And it's important to see that Yetzias Mitzrayim, not Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Avdus of Mitzrayim, gave us that rachamim. So going back to why I said you got to begin with the bad, it's not simply, oh, by remembering the bad, I'm grateful for freedom. But it's to understand that even in the Avdus that Hashem gives us, there was something positive that we had. Now let me just finish up with there. Now this is an important lesson for our own personal Mitzrayim as well. Because in every life, there is adversity, there is struggle, there is challenge, there are moments of darkness. And sometimes we feel that Hashem has left us, Hashem doesn't care, etc. But what this is teaching us is, if every person has his own Mitzrayim, his or her own Mitzrayim, then we have to learn to see, even in the struggles that Hashem gives us, the seeds of how we can grow to become a better and a greater person, greater than we would have been had there not been that struggle. It's not simply get us out of the struggle so we're back to where we were. If all you are is back to square one, then indeed the whole struggle was a waste. But when it becomes a mechanism for transformation, let me just end with this story, and I'll take a question. All of you know, of course, Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman, Ruchama Shein Olah Shalom's father, Rav Scheinberg's father-in-law, and All for the Boss, the famous biography she wrote of her father. So she tells in the book a very, very interesting story that her father came to the United States with his parents shortly after World War I, and he was, I don't remember the exact age, but 11 or 12, a young kid. And the parents couldn't make it. They went back to Europe. But they left him alone in the United States to make a living. There were no child labor laws then. And they set him up with a relative, and again, I'm making up the exact dollar amounts, where he would rent a room for something like $5 a week. And that would, with his salary, that would be enough to cover it. As soon as the parents left to Europe, the person raised the rent to $10 a week. There was no possible way he could have covered that. He would have had nothing for food. So he was evicted. A 12-year-old boy was evicted. And he's Friday afternoon. And he spent that whole Shabbos in Central Park alone. Now, granted, Central Park was safer then than it later became, although with Giuliani it got safer, you know, safer again. But still, you can now, all he had were two rolls. Further, there was no air, so he couldn't even walk around with it. He's sitting on a park bench with two rolls. And one can imagine, or maybe one can't imagine, how frightened he is. No place to live. And what's going to happen after Shabbos? He has no job. In those days, you worked from Monday to Friday. If you didn't come in on Saturday, Sunday was off, but if you didn't come in on Saturday, you had to get a new job. And, you know, he had really no sense of hope. He had hit bottom. There was like nothing that seemed to be possibly good in his life. So the daughter records, he must have told his family this, the daughter records that he was mispalel to Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, never let me forget what I'm going through tonight. That if you give me a Yeshua, if you give me a Parnassah, if I eventually get married, if I eventually have a Mishpacha, I always want to remember what it's like to be cold and to be hungry and to be lonely and to be friendless. So when I see other Jews who are in that condition, I will not lose patience with them. I will not think, you know, why are they bothering me? I will remember how I felt, and therefore I will know how they feel. And of course, if you know the story, you know that Baruch Hashem, he did grow up, become well, financially well established, although he lost it in the Depression, and his house, with his Eishes Chayil, was a house of Achnasas Orchem, and although he did have his share of Rosh Hashivas and Gedolim, but many of the people that came to his home were people we wouldn't necessarily like as our Shabbos guests. People who were mentally disturbed, people who were depressed, there were people who would hang around for months at a time living there, people who would sometimes violently throw the hot cholent at him if they didn't like it. And he never got impatient. He and his Rebbe, and I should say both, never got impatient, never got annoyed, because the answer always was, I know what they're going through. I know. I experienced it. This is a great gift. The gift of, through our sufferings, through our difficulties, through our nisyonos, we acquire rachamim. And therefore, mascho bignusa mesayim b'shvach actually means to see the redemptive potential, even in the adversities and difficulties of life. No life can be without suffering, but the one thing we ask is, whatever Yisurin we have in life, let us grow from them, let us become transformed from them, and then we've taken a major step in our own Yitzhiyas Mitzrayim. So, you have to do it again.